BFFT. Now, built by high caliber millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Ball Faced Truth.
That's right. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn. I'm Stephen Vaughn. Judah Newby's over there as well. We're filling in for John Canzano here on the Ball Faced Truth. John, down at Mountain West, West Coast Conference Basketball Media Day, later on this week, tomorrow, I believe, he'll have an interview with Mark Few of the Gonzaga Bulldogs as their head coach. That'll be a very fun interview. But today, Judah and myself, we're going to have Oregon State DB Jaden Robinson on the program for the Jamba interview. Jaden's been gone the last couple weeks, which is fine, but he's back. Can't wait for that. Also, Greg Bell, he covers the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to be talking to him as well. We got a big show here on a Thursday. Judah, what is going on, my brother? How are you doing?
Steven, what's up, dude? I'm great. It's always good to talk a little ball with you. And yeah, we got a big show coming up, and I'm coming in hot. I was just in the recording studio next door just to pull pull behind the curtain here, a little peek behind the curtain, wrapping up our conversation with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune and KJR, and we went right all the way up to 3 o'clock, and just got off the phone with him.
So yeah, you had to bring the lefty in. You had to bring the lefty in to get her batter out, and then let you go the rest of the way.
You are left-handed.
No, I'm not. I throw right-handed. I write right-handed, but I bat left-handed.
You do bat left-handed.
I do.
But you kick left-footed.
No, I kick right-footed.
All right, You know, it was always weird, the guys in baseball that would throw right-handed but hit left-handed.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Or no, the guys that threw left-handed and hit right-handed. That's weird.
Yeah, see, I throw right-handed. I do everything right-handed, but I hit left-handed. And then like when I golf,
so you're
golf
one of those. Yeah. Do we have a name for those people?
Awesome people.
Awesome. Yeah.
But it's like, it's funny because I suck with my left hand. Like when I played basketball,
I see what you're saying.
Like I just suck. I wasn't very good going left or anything. You know, I was always going right. So, it's very weird that like, you know, I bat left-handed, yeah. But it's all about the old backswing.
I remember, yeah, that's right. I remember baseball growing up, played with a guy named Vernon. So shout out Vernon if you're listening. He was one of those throw left, and he pitched too. He was like a left-handed pitcher, right-handed hitter. I'm like, how does that happen? That loses like the advantage of being left-handed. But yeah, we need a name for those people if we don't have them already. We got a big show. We got the 5 at 5 a little bit later on. John Canzano will be back tomorrow. He is having a conversation with Mark Few as we speak, and he's going to have that on the show tomorrow. So be here 3 to 6 for his exclusive conversation with Mark Few. John is at the Mountain West WCC Media Days right now, Stephen. And I saw the Beavers came out in the preseason poll. Where are the Beavers supposed to finish on the men's side in the WCC this year?
Yeah, not good. 7th in the West Coast Conference, which is about right. Looking at it when I go through it, right ahead of Portland and San Diego, but Gonzaga picked number 1 as they always are behind. Then St. Mary's and Santa Clara is supposed to be good this season as well. Washington State's at 5. San Francisco's at 4. I kind of skipped them, but then LMU and then Oregon State at number 7. So it seems about right, honestly. You know, the Oregon State basketball program hasn't been great ever since that Elite Eight run. It seems so long ago, back in 2021. Or is that 2020?
It was 21.
That's 21, right?
Canceled in 20.
I was trying, yeah.
Indianapolis bubble in 21.
That's right, 21. It seems so long ago.
Pour a glass of vino, go Beavs. That was Wayne Tinkle's rallying cry. And that was so much fun, man. That was one of my favorite times here at the station, was that Beavers run. And people forget, I don't know if they forget or not, but I forget sometimes. They were tied with Houston at the under 4 timeout. Yeah. Like, they came all the way back to tie that basketball game at the under 4 timeout with a chance to go to the final freaking 4.
Yeah, what was the guy? That Bruce. Bruce, was that the guy's little point guard's name? He hit the 3, little bank 3.
No, Gianni Hunt hit that.
Was that Gianni Hunt?
The lefty.
That's right.
That jitterbug lefty, man. That guy was a mile a minute and nothing would be unexpected with Gianni Hunt.
Who then finished his career as a backup at Sacramento State. So it shows you how good that team really was.
Like, he brought energy.
He did hit the 3, but yeah, it seems so long ago, but Oregon State 7th in the West Coast.
Who is the big guy? Who Roman?
Roman Silva.
Silva. Yeah. Roman Silva. Dude, that guy, man, he's bone crunching screens. You know, don't get in the way of the 7-1 guy. Dude, when they beat Loyola Marymount, that was unbelievable.
Loyola Chicago.
Sorry, Loyola Chicago. Yeah. Beat Porter Moser and Loyola Chicago. That was unbelievable to me. Because they had the, like, the Sabonis passer, Krautwig or whatever his name was. And the Beavs went out and beat those guys, man. Went to the Elite Eight. The Beavers.
College basketball is actually right around the corner. It's a couple weeks away. Which, speaking of, there was some big news today in college basketball.
Massive news. Let's start there. Yeah. I mean, we'll get to Sabrina's big shot as well. That was super cool to see. Sabrina going off playing hero ball. And Kelly Graves in the building for that one.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And we'll talk a little college football, obviously. We got Oregon on a Friday night against Purdue tomorrow. And that's a 6 o'clock kick on Fox. Unpack some of the details from that one. Oregon State taking on UNLV. As mentioned, we'll have a conversation with Jaden Robinson coming up later this hour as part of our Jamba interview of the week. Jamba, Life is Better Blended. Big game for the Beavers taking on Nevada, Las Vegas tomorrow night. So that'll be coming up. Plus, Greg Bell. We'll chat a little Seahawks. You know, when I'm in the chair, we're going to talk a lot of NFL and a lot of Seahawks as well, as they got a big game coming up in Atlanta against the Falcons, and a lot to unpack there. But I'm with you, Stephen. This broke just before the show. Tony Bennett, longtime head coach in college basketball. Obviously, around here, people remember him from his days at Wazoo, and his dad was in the business for a long time. And, of course, his tenure at Virginia, that included a lot of success. You know, they beat Oregon in a 12-1 game with Peyton Pritchard against Kyle Guy, and I remember that Virginia team. That was a rock fight of a game. I think it finished like 53-49 in a Sweet 16 game a few years back. They were a one seed that lost in the first round, first one seed ever to lose in the first round to UMBC to win the national championship the following year, Stephen. And then today, just learning, Tony Bennett calling it a career on the eve of the season. He is announcing his retirement. What'd you make of this?
It's wild. And to think now, you know, 20 days away, Virginia is from their opening tip-off. The transfer portal now opens for those Virginia players for 30 days. The season kicks off, tips off in 20 days.
And that's automated from the
coaching
retirement,
yes.
From the coaching change.
Any coaching change opens up the transfer portal, opens it up for that entire team. And so the portal will open for the next 30 days. Virginia plays in 20. Like, it's just, you know, and there's been reports that there's no health issue. Jeff Goodman said there's no health issue with Tony Bennett. But there are likely other reasons, which is NIL and the transfer portal. The way that things have gone, the way that the college sports have changed, these coaches that have been there forever, that have been so successful doing it one way and doing it their way, it's hard to adjust. And we've heard a lot of coaches. We've seen a lot of coaches. Nick Saban, you know, Coach K, Jim Boeheim, all these guys have retired. Tony Bennett, just add him to the list. He's one of the legends on that list as well that is retiring. And it seems like it's because of NIL and the transfer portal. And it breaks my heart a little bit at a time because I love college sports. Like, that is what I love. I love the NFL. I love the NBA. But there's something about just the college athletes that are playing out there, playing for their school. It's not as good. It's not a good product. Like, the NFL, the NBA is a better product than college basketball, college football. But it's just something about the pageantry that we're getting. And now we seem to be losing that because of all the dollars that are involved. It's always been about money, but now it's even more about TV revenue and TV money. And now these coaches are saying, look, man, I can't deal with all the NIL, the transfer portal. Dana Altman said that the transfer portal is like speed dating. Like, it's a different game. And I think a lot of these coaches just don't want to do it anymore. It's just too much on them. It's not enough satisfaction out of it. And it's just sad because I think we're losing it, and it's turning into a minor league for the professional leagues. We don't need a minor league. We need college football and college basketball, not a minor league NFL.
It's definitely evolving, and it's definitely changing. Some people are better at adapting than others. And, you know, I don't know. What would you have thought? Do you think Tony Bennett would have outlasted Dana Altman in this new look college basketball world? And that makes me think a couple of things. Number one, it really matters the institution that you're at, right, with how well you may be able to pivot like a coach. Oregon, it's just more well-equipped and more invested in pivoting to the new look NIL space across the board than Virginia is. And that's going to the Big Ten is part of that. The NIL, I'm sure, is part of that. But, Stephen, that's part of the brand, too. Like, if Dana Altman was at Virginia, he would have been gone a long time ago, I think. But because he's at Oregon, yeah, it's gotten harder on him, but he got Stubblefield back. and he's got the resources and infrastructure at Oregon that you may not have other places. I don't think that investment is the same at Virginia, and they've won a national championship.
No, and you're right. Like, Altman's brought in a lot of his assistants that, you know, was on this staff before, and I think it's so they can kind of deal with the recruiting and deal with that kind of stuff. He can deal with the X's and O's, because it's the head coach is less and less about X's and O's nowadays. Like, I know that we like to get on Dan Lanning for, you know, not winning the big game. He beats Ohio State, and now we're all, hey, he can win the big game. But he's had a couple of those losses. Is it really his decision? Like, he's not the one calling the plays. He's more of the front man. He's the head man. He's the recruiting expert. He talks about in his post game, right after post game, as he's leaving, he goes, hey, if there's any good players, tell them to come to Oregon. Like, he's always recruiting. It's more about the coordinators.
He's the chief marketing officer.
Right, right. Like, he's the head of it, and it's not even about X's and O's with him. It can just be recruiting with him, and he's just delegating everything else. I think these head coaches, especially in basketball, especially because that's more of an X's and O's sport. Like, football's always had the recruiting aspect to it, where there's always these back alley deals where you're getting, you know, handshakes full of money, and it's been more than that than basketball. And so a lot of times in football, it's always been the figurehead, but now it's coming into basketball as well, and we're seeing these guys retire, where it's not even about coaching at all. It's just about, hey, what can you do in the transfer portal NIL space? And that's why a guy like John Calipari is so wanted by Arkansas, and he goes there, now he's celebrated there because he's so good at it.
I honestly forgot Cal was at Arkansas until you just mentioned that. This is going to be an interesting year. I'm not really one to pay attention to college hoops until the conference tournament, by and large.
You don't need to.
But, you know, you will, though.
I will, because I'm a sicko, but...
You're a proud sicko. And there's reasons to be sick about college basketball.
But now with college football, you can almost say, well, we don't have to pay attention until, you know, week 10.
But you will. It's a more naturally gravitating sport, though, than the product of college basketball.
Do we have to pay attention to the Ducks until the Big Ten title game? They're in the playoff. They're not going to lose.
So I don't fully buy that they're not going to lose. The team that you saw beat Ohio State, you're confident they're not going to lose to anybody?
They're going to be double-digit favorites over everybody except for probably at Michigan. They're going to be double-digit favorites.
Yeah, I mean, so to me, Michigan, like, they are a very good defense. That's a different test for Oregon than Ohio State at home. Even though Ohio State was good defensively, I think Michigan's a tougher test on the road.
But
if you take away that edge, you take away the Autzen edge, You're just going to, you know, pencil in a victory there?
No, I don't know.
Wisconsin gave USC hell a couple weeks ago before USC pulled away. I don't know.
Wisconsin.
They're better than Wisconsin, but you never know.
No, I agree with you. But even with the win over Ohio State, they can lose to Michigan and they'll still make the playoff. Like, they have that cushion.
That's true, but not all playoff positions are created equal. I think it would be a disappointment now that they beat Ohio State. It would be a disappointment if Oregon lost once in the regular season, lost the Big Ten title game, and found themselves in a position where they had to have a road playoff game.
I agree, because
do you think that's impossible?
No, it's not.
It's not impossible.
Therefore,
you need to watch to see if they're going to come through this. You know, remember Washington, Oregon last year, right? Huge, crazy game, chaotic game. Ducks go for it on fourth down a bunch. They don't get. They come up short. Who looked better coming out of that game? Oregon did. Washington should have lost to Arizona State the next week. Kind of got bailed out by the refs in a 15-7 game in Seattle. And it was a struggle bus for Washington, but they kept finding ways to win. I'm really eager to see how Oregon looks coming out of this game with Ohio State. Against Purdue even tomorrow, yeah, they should win. They should win comfortably. But will it be easy breezy the whole way? I don't know. It should be, but I'm not ready to assume that yet.
And it's different because it is football, and we all love football, and we're going to watch every single game no matter what it is. So
yeah.
I'm with you. I'm just saying, now that we've expanded the playoff, like, Oregon's going to be in the playoff. Unless something drastic happens where they lose games they're not supposed to lose, they're going to be in the playoff. So, it's just a different
world.
And
the matchups are still more novel, right? The Big Ten matchups are still more novel. The Michigan, we've seen Michigan before, but it's still, like, we hardly see it. Wisconsin the same way. We hardly see it. So we get to see it again. There's still some of that makes it attractive as well. But to your point, the consequences of a regular season loss are fewer. In college basketball, you don't see as often those sweet regular season matchups that really matter, that really, really matter.
Right, because they don't exist until the NCAA tournament.
You could play Carolina down in Hawaii or wherever Oregon goes sometimes. Where they played Carolina a couple years ago or last year down there in that Maui Invitational, but it won't full, it will matter a little bit to your RPI or whatever at the end of the year, but there's no way to tell that in real time.
No, and it won't matter. Yeah, that's why college basketball, nobody cares about until March Madness, where in college football, like, yeah, there is still somewhat of a question of who's going to make the playoff, but we're getting to a point where when we expand again, when we go to 16 teams, when we go to 24 teams, these regular season matchups really don't matter. Like, your teams are going to be in the playoff regardless, and they're going to be it from the get-go. So, I that's my fear, is that it's going to turn into this, especially if the Big Ten and the SEC, they break off and do their own thing. Like, is it really just about the product on the field? It's not to me. Like, that's not what college sports, and that's not what college football is to me. It's not about the product on the field. If I wanted the best product, I'm just going to watch the NFL all day. But I like the pageantry. I like the emotion. You don't get, 60,000 fans rushing the field after the Seahawks beat the 49ers up at Lumen Field.
It'd be nice if they beat them at Lumen at some point.
But you get that at Austin Stadium. You get all the fans rushing the field after they beat
Ohio
State.
Let me ask you this, though, about Tony Bennett. A couple things out of this. One, the timing. And I know you say, hey, people are saying out there, they're reporting, it has nothing to do with his health. If it has nothing to do with his health, a little odd timing, right?
Very odd.
Kind of puts the Hoos in a tough position down in Whoville.
It is weird. I don't know why. I mean, I guess he just doesn't want to go through the season. Like, it's just stressful. It's just a stressful thing to go through the whole year.
Couldn't figure that out a few months ago?
I guess not. I don't know.
You know what I mean?
I have
the same question, it sounds like.
I do, yeah. I don't know why he would do it in such weird timing right before the season. I mean, we're 20 days away from the season. We're having media days. Like, this is an ideal time to call it retirement.
So that's number one. That's my question. And number two, you say the sport is going, you're not a fan of where the sport is going with all these coaches leaving and citing the changes in the landscape. The counterpoint to that, I'm curious what you think. Nick Saban's departure paves a way for Dan Lanning to become more of a star, for a guy like Kalen DeBoer to be more of a star. These are younger coaches. I know Kalen's obviously older than Dan, but take Dan as an example. Younger coaches that in this new landscape thrive. Couldn't the same be said for the next batch of coaches in college basketball? And isn't that a good thing for the sport?
It could be. It could very well be, but it is also...
You need the old heads gone to get the new blood in.
But it's also a question of how long can Dan Lanning do it like he's doing? Where he's going nonstop 24-7, 365.
Young cat.
He's young. I understand that.
37, 38. Winner.
I mean, setting his alarm 10 different times.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious. And
Super relatable.
I felt him so much because I am the exact same way, and Coach Vaughn hates it because I'll set like 12 alarms and this all start going off. And she's like, just get up then. I'm like, I can't. I can't get up. So I felt Dan Lanning in that one. I didn't. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just, I just don't like the way.
You don't think it's sustainable.
I don't like the direction that college sports are going. I understand that we got to pay the athletes. That's fine. Let's figure it out. Let's get it all on the same page, though. It's such a wild west out there.
But there's still brands that are going to do it successfully. Isn't that something to be applauded? It's a new landscape. You might not like the landscape, but some people are doing it well. I mean, it's a new game. You got to applaud the people that are doing that are playing the new game well.
No, you do.
Right?
And Oregon
is clearly doing that. And I just think in college basketball, like Tony Bennett going, this is the other thing with Tony. Like, super successful. You talk about product. That wasn't the most appealing style of play. I mean,
no.
Those guys were scoring 50 points a game. I mean, there was a beauty about it. There was some postseason, success in addition to losing as a 1-16, but they won a national title. The tempo? They had no tempo. They played great defense. I mean, it was a rock fight anytime you played those guys.
Always last in pace of the game. You're right. No. And
who are the young and up and coming college basketball coaches that we need to be watching out for that you know of? Is Sprinkle one of them? I don't know how old that guy is, but he comes to mind at UW. Who are some of these other young cats, the Dan Lanning equivalents that are about to take the sport by storm? Because to me, honestly, in realignment and all this, you got to steer into these guys. You got to steer into the young guys with energy that are on the come, that are, leaders of big time brands right now. Frankly, I'm eager to see, Dan is not going to last forever, obviously. Could be one more year, could be two more years. Where does Oregon go for their Dan Lanning equivalent in men's basketball? Like, that's a massive question. We got to start being aware of some of these names who are coming up the board.
No, I'm with you. And I think it's basketball, especially college, because college basketball is such a weird product where the coaches are so in control of the entire program. Like, they are in control of everything. And there's been numerous situations where guys go from college then to the NBA, and they're so much better in the NBA because in college they had to play under that coach's system no matter what, and they had to fit into that system, and there was no getting out of it. It happened a lot at Kentucky with Calipari. Like, Devin Booker would not, he wasn't even playing, and then he comes in the NBA as a star, as a superstar, because he's allowed to dribble the basketball and run a pick and roll. Calipari doesn't like to run pick and rolls, which is the dumbest thing ever. So yeah, we got to find those in college basketball, and I think these old heads, like as you called them, they are
affectionately.
Yeah, they are. They're getting put in spots now where they have to deal with all these, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old kids saying, "I don't want to play here anymore. I'm going to go somewhere else." Oh. And they don't have the you know, the way to build a program anymore, and it's hard that way. And you hear it in a lot of different coaches or around the nation for college basketball, how they just don't like the way it's going. Now, college football, I think, has embraced it a little bit better than college basketball has.
Yeah,
where the younger coaches are saying, look, I can go out and I can always be recruiting, as Dan Lanning is doing. And he's doing a very good job of it. He's always recruiting. He's recruiting his own team. He's recruiting high schoolers. He's recruiting other guys in other schools.
Three-pronged approach.
I think college basketball has to embrace it. I don't know that they will, because it's just kind of the way it is. And those programs don't really change.
Man, I feel, yeah. And with the roster sizes, obviously, it's kind of apples and oranges with football and basketball in a way. But at the same time, you know, I feel like a lot of these kids will just go where they get the most money, and that makes sense, but you're also kind of sacrificing your culture a little bit. So Tony Bennett retiring at Virginia after, I don't know, how long has he been there? I mean, at least, I would guess 15 years, but it might be longer than that, because it was all the way back when I was in school, you know, and that was about 10, 15 years ago, you know, give or take. But Tony Bennett saying that it's enough for him about a month before the season starts. So we'll see what's next for them. And Dana Altman, keep on ticking, keep on winning down in Oregon on a day when Oregon State is picked 7th in the WCC preseason poll. A lot to get to. Speaking of the Beavs, Jaden Robinson is going to join us next. We spoke to him earlier this afternoon, myself and Steve, and it was a good conversation. Touched on a lot of things. We'll talk to Jaden. Coming up next, our Jamba Juice interview of the week. Greg Bell will talk Seahawks with us in the 4 o'clock hour, leading you up to 5:15 here in the Portland area for Bo Nix, Sean Payton, and the Broncos back in the Big Easy to take on the Saints on Thursday Night Football. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Welcome back to the show. Pleased to be joined now by defensive back, Oregon State, Jaden Robinson, part of our interview series with Jamba. Fantastic flavors and feeling your best is what Jamba's all about. Stop by one of your locally owned and operated Jamba locations today or download the Jamba app and start earning points now. Jamba, life is better blended. Jaden, thanks for making time for us as always, man. I know you've missed the last couple of games, so let's just start right there, man. How you feeling?
I'm feeling a lot better. You know, it's good to be back in the groove of things, you know, slowly but surely.
So it's been a few weeks since we saw you out there. You know, we know you were banged up a little bit. Last saw you in the Purdue game. That was before the bye week. You know, what's it been like? You know, obviously you want to be out there with your team, but you want to make sure that you're 100% as well.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating, you know, not being able to be as impactful as I want to be on the field and off the field, you know, but, you know, being able to coach these guys and, you know, lead them from the sidelines to go out there and dominate how they usually need to be able to do, you know, is always good, you know, moving forward.
You as a leader on this defensive team right here for the Beavers, you know, we always hear sometimes next man up for football. Like, that's kind of how it works. One guy goes down, the next guy comes in. Not that this is good, that there's been so many injuries on the defensive side. Could this actually be a blessing where you guys are going to be, you know, gaining that depth and that experience with some of the guys behind you? Because that game against Nevada, you know, it was a dozen or so guys on the two deep that were out. How does that play into just your guys' you know, your transition into a team and going forward?
You know, I think at least for me, you know, I won't be here next year, but, you know, for those young guys, you know, being able to get in there now, get playing time now, show them what the real deal is, you know, and, you know, to just execute that practice every day, you know, you practice how you play, you know, so when you fall to the level of your preparation in the game, you know, when things get hard. So, you know, being able to have young guys in there play like Shamar, he comes to mind. Exodus making his first start against Nevada. Tyrese is getting playing time in the secondary. You know, we got Dexter out there, a backer. You know, so we got Andy at DN. So, you know, we got a lot of young guys playing right now. But it's going to be good, you know, moving forward into next season for their development.
I mean, you say, you know, you throw those guys into the fire, right? I mean, I was watching the Colorado State game as well. And you were out, Noble was out, you know, a handful of guys were out, and some of the guys coming in, like, they're being targeted right away by these passing attacks. Like, there's no time to, you know, get ready for it. You're in there, and you're probably going to see the ball come your way.
Most definitely.
When you say that you're teaching these guys and kind of bringing them up to speed, how much of it is, like, technique? How much of it is the mindset you got to have as a DB?
A lot of it is the mindset, you know, and the technique. You know, a lot of guys, they get out there, you know, they're young. They haven't been working some for so long. You know, they've just been playing purely off athleticism just because they've been better than everybody they were in high school. So, you know, coming to this next level, having to rely on your technique in critical moments, you know, I think is crucial. So just I'm making sure that's emphasized, you know, in practice from what I could see watching film at home. And, you know, going to practice and watching practice just to be able to help them clean that up, you know, it's going to translate to the game and it's going to help us win games.
Yeah, when you're out with an injury, how are you improving your game? Like, what does your days look like? Because, you know, you can't go out there, you can't practice, you may not be able to lift, you may not be able to do those type of things. But how does a college athlete like yourself, who's a really good player, how do you improve without being able to do it physically? Like, what is it that you're doing mentally that helps you throughout the season?
You know, I think just keeping my mind healthy, you know, making sure, keeping my peace right, you know, making sure that I'm still able to go on the field and execute at the end of the day, you know, but taking care of my body is probably the biggest thing right now. Like, having this time off sucks, but, you know, it gives me a reboot, to say the less, you know, compared to everybody else who's been playing since week one, unfortunately, you know, and haven't sustained any injuries or missed any games. But as far as, you know, coming back, you know, I think just keeping my mental right, reading, you know, making sure I'm still in the playbook. You know, I know every position, so, you know, I'm just being more articulate and fine detail with every position now. And, you know, just making sure I'm ready to get back out there and play any position that they need me at, honestly, in the secondary. So that's my biggest thing.
And you can always get virtual reps playing NCAA, you know? That if I can't be out there, you know, I'm probably playing video games. That's what I'm probably doing.
Most definitely.
Jaden Robinson joining us here on the show, brought to you by Jamba. Life is better blended. You still getting out, walking the dog when you can, Jaden? I know you've mentioned that is part of your time away from school and away from football.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. We just went on a little walk yesterday. Took her around my part of town, you know, but that was, yeah, we still go on walks for the most part.
Are you getting to Jamba, too? I know, you know, your schedule's probably a little bit different in the last couple of weeks, but any Jamba trips?
It's definitely different. I haven't been probably in, like, the last 2-3 days, I think, you know, because I've just been at home recovering.
Yeah.
But before that, I'm definitely probably going to go today. Definitely, probably when we get off the phone.
You need to
be one of those redshirt freshmen or something, you know, deliver some Jamba for you.
Yeah. Like,
for real. Please, some DoorDash help.
By the way, that reminds me, we had Trent Bray on. You know, Trent comes on every week. I think Coach might want a little Jamba too, Jaden. We might need to, you know, run by the office sometime.
Hey, I tried to tell him one day we was on the field pre-practice. I'm like, you know, if you want Jamba, I got you. Just
okay.
Give me your order. He don't even know what he like, I think, though. That's the thing. Like,
What would he like?
He probably like a Caribbean pack.
Yeah. I love that. You know, he pops on every week. So he's like, yeah, I didn't realize Jaden had the Jamba hookups. And I know he's interested in getting in on that, but... yeah, that's a lot of fun. We're talking to Jaden Robinson. You know, you may not be able to disclose. I'm not sure if you are, but I'll give you a chance if you do. Are you going to be able to give it a go this weekend against UNLV?
We're going to see.
Yeah.
Probably not. But worst case scenario, I'm definitely playing next week.
When you look at... Yeah, go ahead.
I would say you've been watching a lot of film, though, of UNLV. I know you that you have, just by based off what you've been saying. Haj Malik Williams, man, him and Ricky White III, they're nasty. What makes them such a good combo? Like, what Oregon State fans need to watch out for going against those two at UNLV?
I think it's just, relying on the level of preparation, like I said. Like, once you break down and watch their film, like, they're not doing anything crazy. They do a lot of motions and shifts, just to get a lot of people's eyes moving. We got a lot of young guys, so the biggest emphasis on defense right now is eyes and doing your assignment and tackling. So, watching these guys, it's not like we got to change anything. We got to do anything out the ordinary to beat these guys. We just got to rely on our preparation and make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do when we do it. And everyone needs to win their one-on-one battles. So,
any Matthew Sluka film pop up this week, or is it all on the new guy?
It's all on new guy.
What'd you make of all that? What'd you make of all that with
that? My first time seeing that, I was like, man, like, I don't blame him, but like, it's crazy that like that's what today's portal and redshirt and NIL has going on. At the end of the day, like, you came to college to play ball. Like, you didn't, the money, there's no factor about money. Your plan was to go to the league to make the money. So, just having this money on top of it, I feel like complicates certain things, but it also helps a lot of situations.
And it's wild because it's all changed since the time that you set foot in Corvallis. Like, you've seen so much change in the industry. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you stepped foot in Corvallis in 2018? What year were you?
Fall of 2018.
Fall of 18. Here we are, fall of 24. I mean, can you imagine how the sport has changed just in the time that you've been at OSU?
I remember getting to college, being there, and then like, dang, like, this is crazy, thinking like they might bring the NCAA game back, hearing about it, and then, they brought it back and I'm in the game. Like, who would have thought of that? Like, then they're talking about paying college athletes, and then the next year they end up paying us. So it's like, it's crazy to see how everything worked out. So
you might stick around for another year,
No, we got to go to the league this year.
How's, man, it's crazy too. I'm a Seahawk fan, but I love the NFL, and I'm seeing guys like, fifth round rookies had to play on Thursday night against the Niners last week, had to play against the Giants on Sunday because guys get banged up, you get turned in, turned out. Like, it's incredible the amount of development. We talk technique, we talk mindset. The amount of development that you have to do from college to the league. I imagine, though, the experience that you've had, and you've seen everything under the sun, do you think that's going to help your on-ramp to, pro football? The amount, you've seen everything, you've experienced everything. It may not take you as longer to get caught up to speed with the technique and with the mindset of playing DB in the NFL.
Yeah, most definitely I think it does help. I think even with my last coach, a high coach, Blue, he, in the room we had, we had Alex, Ray, Nashawn, Dunny, Bump. We had a lot of different pieces. And, he helped configure the room in a way that it was treated like the league. So, there was no days off. Everything, we watched way too much film. Not even saying there's a such thing as too much, but like, we just watched a lot of film, so there was no way we were messing up coverages, messing up whatever we were doing. We were very fine detailed with everything we were doing. So taking that and our studies for opponents and games, like taking that knowledge into the league, knowing how to study an opponent, tendencies, formations, pass sets, drop back, demeanors, like, stuff like that really helps. And going into the league, I think it's just going to be icing on the cake once I get to the league and learn from some vets, some more tips and details that I can use to help improve my game.
Jaden, I love, I'm kind of a nerd in a way. Steven knows this about me, but, I love breaking out the all-22 of NFL games after it gets posted. Generally, it gets posted like 24 hours after a game. So, but I don't know what the hell I'm looking at. I could really benefit from watching some film with you, and you could tell me some pointers. But, and I watch defensive back play and You know, I try to learn coverages and all that, but like I played seventh grade football 1 year, so I don't really know anything. But I pick up on stuff here and there. You know, I saw like Jalen Johnson of he was a Utah guy, and you know he's in the league, and he was chopping it up with C.J. Stroud after a Sunday night game a few weeks ago, and you know C.J. Stroud said that he picked up a tendency of Jalen Johnson's based on a story that Jalen Johnson told on Richard Sherman's podcast. Like, this was the level of scouting C.J. Stroud was going to learn these DBs. And he's like, you were playing a Palms coverage and you bailed out of it and you were being, you know, and all this. And I'm just like, man, it's incredible the detail that you go to kind of learn the opponent. You know, who are some guys in the league that you kind of try to emulate your game after as you keep improving and eye the next level?
You know, Jalen Johnson was a perfect example, how you said. Like, he did some crazy stuff. Like, coming off coverage and palms, like, that's zero, that's man coverage.
That's what you're
saying.
And
then going to make a play like that, like, that's crazy, first of all. But, yeah, like, Jalen Johnson, I like P2, PS2, I like Patrick Surtain, I like Jair Alexander. I like a lot of the, not short, but, like, mid-heighted, lightweight, 195, DBs, you know, a lot on their feet. They could run, but they're real scrappy in coverage. You know, like, they're not making big hits. They're not making crazy plays, but they're always doing their job. They're always in the right place. They're always on detail. They always relying on their technique, you know. So I'm a big technique guy. So I could run with anybody. And using my technique and perfecting that makes everything else easier. So
you've got to have a certain baseline level of, like, confidence and almost cockiness at that position, do you think?
Most definitely.
Does that come naturally to you, or is that something that you have to channel on game day? Because you're such a nice dude. You come on with us. You're so chill. You're so nice. But I know down deep, you know, there's an edge and a killer mentality to you.
Oh, yeah, I definitely flip on game day. When it's game day, it's us, it's bees against the world. You know, whoever lined up across is Bad News Bears, you know. I snap into a mode and I'm ready to go.
Are you a trash talker? Like, are you out there talking a lot of trash to the other opponents?
Like, it depends, you know, like, it depends on who's in front of me. Like, I'll come out, you know, usually first play, you know, line up man to man, boom, be like, okay, let's do it, and however they respond is how I'm gonna take however they're feeling, and then I'm gonna dominance however.
I was always the guy that would talk second. Like, if you're going to talk to me, I'll start talking back to you. But if you're going to start it, I'm going to finish it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. There definitely do be some dudes out there that be, like, too cool, like, too friendly. Like,
yeah
bro, like, good play. Nah, bro, we not cool right now. We not friends.
Between the lines, man, it is on to win. By the way, that reminds me. So you guys are coming off the Nevada game, which was, you know, unfortunate loss coming back. But the Colorado State game, if we can go back to that too, in the end of that game, you know, I was watching that with my family, and we were just pulling for you guys and making a big stop on defense there in the OT. And like, you're down a lot of dudes. I saw, you know, the guy at slot corner is getting targeted a lot, and he's just, you know, feet to the fire. You know, he's going to have to make some plays. And then the last play to win it, it's that, you know, was it a cover zero? I mean, looks like you guys brought a lot of pressure, and it was a one-on-one with 27, Jordan, I believe, making the play late to win it, man. I mean, as a DB, and you root for a guy like that, what was that like to watch and see 27 make that big play to win the game?
Hey, you love to see it. Like, that's what you live for as a DB, like, to make plays like that. You know, I was talking to him the whole game about it. You know, like, 14's a guy, you know, you can make a name off of. Mm. Play your game, and you're gonna get noticed. You know, they're going after him. That's their bread and butter on offense. If they do want to pass the ball, that's what they're going to do. Well, if he's not at one and he's at two, that where he thinks the ball is going to go. You know, they got to have a situation when they did complete the bomb. You know, like, those are got to have a situation. Who are they going to? Like, the tendencies, you know, like I'm saying, like, just game planning. Like, when you in a game, you see the game unfold. We got iPads on the sideline. You coach yourself up as the game going on. So what are you doing here? Why is he doing this? Boom, boom, boom. 14, ball game on the line, last play, you got to throw 14.
Yeah.
You have to. You just tell him, you tell Dre, he buckled up, strapped down, and he did his job, made the play.
There was, Dude, it was awesome. It's like there's no help, right? You're on an island. You got it's you and him. And that guy, Steven, you probably remember too. Like he was making plays in that game against Dion last year, that Horton guy. Like he can play. And they were obviously going to him late, but that was such a huge, you know, huge thing there. Last thing for me, keys to the UNLV game. I know you'll probably be a game time call there, but you know, when you break down these guys, what are some keys to success for you guys defensively and in the game as a whole?
For this game?
Yeah, for this upcoming game, yeah.
You know, stop the run, and then I think everything else will take care of itself at that point. Stop the run and win your one-on-one. You do that, you execute, play with effort, everything else take care of itself and be physical.
You know, that's the exact same thing that Coach Bray said yesterday.
Because that's like, what it comes down to at
word
the end
for
of the
word.
Day. Like,
yeah.
You keep hitting somebody in their stuff, they're going to want to tap out eventually. And if they keep going, they're going to tire down, and we built for it. So, you know, I mean, that's just how it goes.
And as a DB, you're in there to stop the run too. Like, you know, you don't want to make a mistake about it. Obviously, those PBUs and INTs are nice, but you're not afraid to get your
you
nose in there, stop the run, man.
Too. Yeah, you got to come up and stop this run.
All 11, man. All 11. Man, we love talking ball with you, Jaden. Thanks for making time with us. And Canzano will be back for the normal, you know, show next week. And we appreciate it. And, hey, you know, hopefully you get a jumbo here in the next day or two or right after this interview and get back after it, man. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I'd love to be here and talk with you guys.
There he is, Jaden Robinson on the show, and that is brought to you by Jamba. Life is better blended. Appreciate Jaden popping on.
Real quick, Judah, how cool is it that he answered it the same way Trent Bray did?
That was great.
Because here was Trent Bray when the Canzano,
oh, you got the audio?
I got it. Canzano asked him. Canzano asked him what the key is.
Give fans one thing that maybe you're looking for that they can also look for if they're at the stadium and looking for a sign that things are going well.
Run defense. If we stop the run well on Saturday, then we're going to be just fine in the game.
That's exactly what Jaden Robinson said. He goes, run defense. If we stop the run, it's all good.
That's how you know a message is getting across.
Yeah, so. That's what I thought was. It's just Trent Bray is getting his message across to his team and like getting them ready.
Good coaching. Fantastic flavors and feeling your best is what Jamba's all about. Stop by one of your locally owned and operated Jamba locations today. Download the Jamba app. Start earning points now. Jamba, life is better blended. Big Splash coming up next. Bunch of audio. Seahawks talk with Greg Bell a little bit later on. Thursday Night Football as well. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
All right, Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. John will be back tomorrow. An exclusive conversation with Mark Few, Gonzaga head coach, is on deck for tomorrow as well. Stephen, what are you kind of hoping to learn from a Mark Few interview with Canzano on tomorrow's show, 3 to 6?
I kind of want to know, like, what the exact benefits are of going to the Pac-12 rather than staying in the West Coast Conference. Because in the West Coast Conference, it was set up for Gonzaga to make the NCAA tournament every single season. Now, they were going to be good enough anyways, but the way that their conference tournament is set up, they have the double byes. If you get the top two seed in the regular season, which Gonzaga is always going to be. So they're already in the quarterfinals of their tournament every single season. There's been seasons where they have struggled, but they got to the quarterfinals right away, and they end up winning the conference tournament and get to the NCAA tournament. They also got more money compared to all the other schools in the West Coast Conference. Now you're going to the Pac-12 where you're not going to get it. You're going to be the same as everybody else. I want to know like what the exact benefits are, because how much bigger can their brand actually get?
Yeah.
Like they're already a national brand. They're already probably a top 10 national brand in all of college basketball. So I would love to know like what the reasons are of why the Pac-12 is so much better than the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, and what is it with his timeline? You know, to me, it's a move that you make for post-Mark Few, right? It's a move that that keeps you in a elevated position from a brand standpoint when your head coach that's built you up to this point goes and walk away. Do you think they'll have the same plug-and-play success in a post Mark Few world?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can't just replace.
Like he's
Mark
special.
Few. Yeah, he's
right?
special. He's special. Yeah, and I mean, Tommy Lloyd was supposed to be that guy, and he didn't want to wait anymore, and he went to Arizona, which you know can't blame him for going to Arizona.
By the way, just a little temperature check on him. How's it going for him at Zona? Obviously, they've been to postseasons. How would you kind of rate the Tommy Lloyd Zona tenure so far?
Well, I think it's really good. I mean, at some point, they got to make a Final Four.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't do it with Sean Miller either.
You've been saying that for a while with Zona, right?
Yeah, so I feel
what
like...
Was it 97?
Jeez, yeah.
Something like that?
Probably.
I think, yeah.
When they won it, didn't
Miles
they?
Simon?
Yeah.
I think it goes back that far.
Yeah, I would.
With them?
I don't remember any other time. So, yeah, I mean, it's been that long. So, yeah, I mean, I think they like him, obviously. He's a really good coach. So they got to, at some point, you know, break that barrier and get there. I think being in the Big 12 is going to help them. Like, that conference is going to be nasty for college basketball.
Yeah. We'll do a big splash here. Actually, you know what? I was talking Mark Few, so we'll save big splash for next segment. But, you know, there's another NBA injury. Steven, this is part of my thing with the NBA. I mean, you could have told me this Kawhi Leonard story was literally in any other season, and I would believe you. It's deja vu all over again. It's Groundhog Day with Kawhi Leonard and his health. That'll be part of our big splash coming up on the other side. Blazers played last night. Steven, did you go to the game?
No, I did not go.
You were not there?
No.
For the Bundesliga team?
No, didn't feel like...
Bundesliga basketball team, I should say.
I didn't feel like I need to be there.
The Blazers did not cover the 36.5. 6.5, so there you go. Fade the Zers. 4 o'clock hour coming up next on the BFT.
BFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano. Here's Jude Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the ball-faced crew.
Great to be here talking football with you on a Thursday. Jude Newby, Stephen Vaughn on 750 The Game and the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network. John Canzano will be back tomorrow, including an exclusive conversation with Gonzaga men's basketball coach Mark Few. Be here 3 to 6 for that one. Plus, Ducky's Boilermakers, will they be spoiler makers? Probably not. You know, Stephen, we've had those Purdue beat writers on the show this week, and they know the team as well as anybody, but it does seem like that Purdue knows that they're up against a pretty big challenge on Friday night.
I feel like I keep seeing the national people and other college football people saying, oh, this is a trap game. This is a trap game. I feel like I'm the only one that thinks it's not a trap game. Like, the Ducks are going to roll Purdue. And you're right. We had the West Lafayette guys on, and they know the team stinks. They know that team's not good. I was at the Oregon State-Purdue team game. I know they fired their offensive coordinator. Hudson Card's not the quarterback anymore. They have a freshman quarterback. But you're telling me a freshman quarterback is going to come in and watch the Ducks and you know, put it on them? I don't see that. I just feel like this game is going to be, you know, the Ducks aren't going to have to show a lot, and they're going to be able to win this game by 20 plus points. Are the Ducks going to cover 27.5? Now that's a different question. I think you can tell me Purdue can cover 27.5. But guess what? When the Ducks win by 24, that's a rollover. That's a blowout. It's not like this is a game in question. I don't see it. I don't see this game being a tough one for Oregon.
Top of your mind, how well do the Ducks do with these big numbers from a betting standpoint?
Well,
Portland State, you know, obviously, stuff like that. I feel like they've covered big numbers before. Do they let kind of teams hang around a little bit? They kind of let the foot off the gas in these? And I'm talking strictly betting the number here. You know, how do they do with big numbers? That might be a hard thing to handicap, literally, but I'm trying to figure out, are they good with a 27.5 point spread, or how do they look?
Well, I mean, they didn't cover against Michigan State.
No, they did not.
They didn't cover against UCLA.
By the way, you had Michigan State in that game, and they were up 31-0, I believe, right?
Yeah, that sounds about
or
right.
Or 30-0, maybe, something like that. And Sparty, Jace Move, and Aiden Childs.
Kicked that field goal, baby.
10 points, but Childs actually got taken out late.
Yeah,
right?
It was 31-0 in the fourth.
And but then Sparty goes and backdoors that bad boy and wins you your ticket. But
yeah, they didn't cover the UCLA game either.
No.
Obviously didn't cover Boise State or Idaho.
So they
they had the Beavs. They covered the Beavs game. And the
play's
got to
be Purdue.
Ohio State.
The play has to be Purdue from a number, right?
I mean, 27.5 seems like a lot for a road team or for a home team.
They fired Graham Harrell. Isn't that the head coach, Walters, the defensive head coach, took over play calling last week?
Yeah,
play calling?
He's a defensive guy. I don't know.
I've never seen that happen before. I think Dan Lanning said the same thing. He's like, I've never seen that happen before. And they go up there and nearly beat my boy Bielema. Like, That's crazy. Like, that was a homecoming for Walters, too, wasn't it? That's where he came from, Illinois.
I'm with you. 27.5 seems like an awful lot, but at the same time, like, I don't feel like this game's going to be in doubt ever. Like, I feel like Oregon's going to roll this game and handle it pretty easily. I know it's a tough spot because they're coming off the emotional win of the Ohio State game, and we've been talking about Dan Lanning and the 12th man every day until today. Today's like the first day we haven't. Nobody's been talking about it, but Lanning's been on, you know, Dan Patrick talking about it. That's the whole thing. The NCAA changed the rule, so it's a distraction.
They hate the Ducks. The NCAA hates the Ducks.
It's just, I mean, I get it. It's a letdown spot against Purdue, but it's Purdue. Like,
I mean, you
let's
know.
Not, let's not overthink this. And I'm the king of overthinking. Let's not overthink this one.
It's Purdue. What we do. It could be like, you know, get guys a half a football and then get guys off their legs, right? And, you know, play some second and third stringers to finish it out. That's why I think 27.5 is, I think Purdue can cover that because I think Oregon probably lets off the gas here. Like, there's no reason to go balls to the wall with this game. It's take care of business, play a clean game, get out of there without any injuries. It does not have to look pretty. A couple highlights won't be a bad thing here and there. Probably don't play Trayshawn Holden, probably don't play Jordan Birch, you know, in this game, and get out clean. You know, don't commit penalties and go out and win this game by 21 and call it a day. Like, that to me would be the measured objective for Oregon in this game, and you know, be able to pick yourself up and get ready for your next stretch of games that includes Michigan on the road and Illinois on CBS in Eugene. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful time to play that game. I always in my head figured that would be a night game. To get Oregon, Illinois in on CBS and Autzen, like, that's the thing with this realignment that I think is really sweet. You know, we're going to get a CBS broadcast of a game at Autzen on a Saturday afternoon. It's similar to being fired up about the NBC treatment at 4:30 on a Saturday. CBS 12:30 Saturday is really, really cool. And I'm really, I don't know if that's going to be a Nestler Danielson game, but I hope so. You know, you get the SEC feel vibes of that broadcast in Autzen on a Saturday at 12:30. How cool is that?
Yeah, and for the Duck fans, this Saturday, Illinois takes on Michigan. So those are the Ducks' next two opponents. They play each other the week before.
Get your scouting in.
Yeah, so you get your scouting in with Jack Tuttle of Michigan Wolverines.
You know Illinois is going to be there to, I don't know their health situation, but you never discount Bielema in Illinois, that's for sure. Hey, let's do the big splash. Promised it last hour, ran up against the clock, but I want to talk about this with you.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be.
The Big Splash. Brought to you by Keller Burger, home of the peanut butter pickle bacon burger, and voted best burger 5 years in a row. Keller Burger, the burgers your mama warned you about.
I feel like this is an NBA Mad Lib of sorts. You know, just rotate the team and keep the name Kawhi Leonard, and I'll believe anything. LA Clippers star Kawhi Leonard sidelined indefinitely to begin the NBA season, rehabbing inflammation in his right knee. I mean, I feel like I've seen this sentence in various forms 10 times out of the last 10 years. The 33-year-old Leonard has neither played during the preseason or has participated in any activity. So some of this has to be, you know, expected. James Harden says he feels more comfortable this season after a full training camp. I mean, you rotate the names around, you rotate the teams around, Steven, but one thing is certain: death taxes and Kawhi Leonard, you know, injury status, riding the bench to start the year. What'd you make of all this? Clearly, I'm not surprised. I'm a little fatigued with it all with Kawhi. What's his basketball future even at this point?
Oh, man, it's tough to say. I don't know without being there about his future, but
I mean, even if you were there, I don't know that you would know.
That's true, because you just don't know with Kawhi. It's unfortunate because Kawhi is one of the best players when healthy in the NBA, you know, within the last 15, 20 years. Like, that's how good he's been. He's been the finals MVP with two different teams. Not many guys have done that, and Kawhi has done that. Like, you know, and his peak powers, he was the guy that could guard LeBron better than anybody, and that was the guy LeBron did not want him to guard. So I love Kawhi Leonard. He's always been one of my favorite players when he's out there. So it is unfortunate because the Clippers have had some rosters where you thought, okay, they could make a run with Kawhi and Paul George and then James Harden, and he never could stay healthy with the Clippers, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's a Hall of Fame player. So it's just, yeah, so it's one of those guys you cannot rely on, and you can't say he can give us 50 games. It's just, we'll play him when he can. When you're 100% healthy and you can play, you're going to play, but besides that, we can't count on you.
So there's, you know, and tell me whether or not you think this is fair. I'm not saying I believe this about Kawhi, but maybe a little bit. Between the load management stuff and between all this ambiguity with health, you know, desire. What's his desire? Do you think desire is, are we able to question somebody's desire? Are we too removed from the situation?
I wouldn't question his desire.
You would not?
No, I think it's very unfair to question their desire unless you know for a fact.
Including the postseason availability stuff, including the load management in the regular season. It's just all bad luck.
The load management stuff, yeah, because he's trying to stay healthy for the playoffs, and he still can't do that even when he load manages.
So if you critique anything, it's the Clippers' investment in him? Where's the part of this where people are at fault? I need to find fault with somebody.
His body. You're just blaming his body. His body failed him.
But you knew that when you signed him, no?
But but it's like the Brandon Roy situation with the Blazers. The Blazers knew his knee was not going to last.
They didn't give him Kawhi money.
They gave him max deal.
Did they?
They did.
But Kawhi's gotten more than one max deal at this point.
Yeah, but Kawhi also was a two-time finals MVP for two separate teams.
And so that's the cost of doing business, even with the body.
Yeah, because when he's healthy, he was maybe the best player in the NBA. You know, just as good as LeBron. Like, he can guard him as well as anybody. There's video of when LeBron was on the Heat, Kawhi was on the Spurs.
But you're going, that's 2014. You know, when did he get to L.A.?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
After they won with the Raptors.
That was 19, right?
19, yeah.
So, I mean,
the last 4 or 5 years has been tough.
They've gotten no ROI out of this guy.
They haven't. But at the same time, in the NBA, it's all about talent. It's all about acquiring the talent and can you get him? And you have to give these guys these type of deals.
Does the new arena come into play with Ballmer in that regard? Like, you got all the stars to try to build the arena? Sorry, that's my studio here. I'll let you go here.
No, I don't.
Let you run here. So, something's on low battery back here if you hear it over the mic.
I don't think so, no, because it's just the cost of the NBA and trying to get guys to come to your franchise. I mean, James Harden has gotten max contracts wherever he's gone, and has he deserved it? Probably not. But you can't afford to not pay these guys, because if you don't pay them and they go somewhere else, you lose them for nothing. It's all about asset building in the NBA. And every single player is an asset, and every single contract is tradable. No matter how bad it is, you can always trade a contract in the NBA. There's a way to get around it, and you just cannot lose those guys for nothing. So if you're the Clippers and you want to go out and you get a really good player, yeah, you have to overpay Kawhi Leonard. If the Blazers could have overpaid Kawhi Leonard, I would have loved it, because it would have meant, hey, they got a guy in Kawhi Leonard who can be, you know, the best player on a championship team. And you pay him. That's why when the Blazers, you know, they trade Damian Lillard, they're actually going to let him walk. They wanted to trade him so they can get assets for him. I think that's just the price you pay with players in the NBA. It's just a different game. Like, it's not even about just like what the actual contract is. It's just about, can you get this player on your team, and then we'll figure out all the contracts later, because you can trade guys. Guys are going to be forcing their way out, as we saw Paul George. Like, Paul George, no one thought anything about it, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'm going to go to the 76ers. Okay, well, then we got to figure this out. So I just think rule one for the NBA is just get that guy in the building, and then rule two, that's when you figure out everything else to go with it.
Well, that's what Portland's doing. You know, when you get a Denny Avdija, you go get the Denny Avdija. You got to get the superstar. Tongue in cheek, but you and I both are optimistic about Avdija, and probably has a big year in Portland. Preseason, by the way, for the Zers concludes tomorrow night. Ratio Farm I looked it up. I spent an inordinate amount of time on YouTube trying to pronounce or learn how to pronounce this German Bundesliga team that they played last night. So I'm going with Ratio Farm Ulm. That's what I thought I heard the German guy say on YouTube. Blazers 111, Ratio Farm Ulm 100. Scoot, game high 23. Donovan, 11 rebounds. And Scoot, 6 assists. Pretty good. Pretty good night's work. Didn't cover the 36.5. Didn't come close, but that's all right. You won the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if there's much you can take away when you're playing Ratio or whatever you just said.
You know,
should have been listening to see what they
called. No, it's fine.
No, it's, Scoot, it's nice to see Scoot have a good game, because his first preseason game against the Clippers up in Seattle, he was really bad. Turned the basketball over a lot. And per 48 minutes last season, Scoot had the second most turnovers per 48 minutes. So he turns the ball over a lot. That's just kind of what he did last season. So that's the one thing you want to see out of Scoot, is if he's going to be a ball handler, he's going to be your lead guard. You can't be turning the basketball over. That's just going to get you out of ball games. So nice to see Scoot have a nice game. You know, no turnovers in 32 minutes, even if it is against lesser competition. Still got to see those kind of strides.
By the way, the preseason game a couple nights ago in Seattle, did you see Mike McDonald went, the head coach of the Seahawks? Jody and Bert took him there. John Schneider was there. And lo and behold, Stephen, they ran in to one Pete Carroll courtside at the game. Little awkward. What it felt like. It felt a little awkward. Now, Mike went over and he talked to Pete. You know, they talked. They looked like they were having a good time, and Schneider took a selfie. But I'll ask Greg Bell about this coming up later this hour, by the way. We'll talk some Seahawks with Greg Bell coming up at 4:40. We'll do that. So be here for that. But Mike McDonald running into Pete Carroll at the preseason Blazers-Clippers basketball game was a fun little wrinkle to everything. Nothing like your defensive successor coming out. Pete probably had a new.
Yeah, how
he was
did you
be
feel
there.
About that as a Seahawks fan?
Well, very conflicted. I mean, in a way, it warmed my heart because McDonald and Pete came over.
You were mad at Pete Carroll at the end. You didn't like Pete Carroll at the end, did you?
You know how it goes.
You felt like the guy was here for
a long time, and he tried to adapt. He did, man. He did. He really tried to adapt.
He tried,
but you know,
good job, good effort
on defense. The scheme passed him by, and then he tried to adapt to the Fangio world, and I give him credit for that. He tried to adapt to the odd fronts, the 3-4s, and couldn't stop the run worth the flying darn. In, you know, guess what? The Seahawks this year having trouble stopping the run.
I was gonna say, it's just like this year.
Out of odd fronts, the only difference is you're 6 games into a first-year head coach. Personnel is slightly different, but you know, and McDonald is just different from an attitude standpoint with Pete. He probably shares more commonality with Pete than might be seen on the surface, but McDonald is more of a, you know, discipline, let's get it done. But he's a good communicator. He's solution-oriented, not a big, like, yeller or anything like that. But it's a different culture vibe than it was with Pete, other than the fact that they were both defensive guys. So it was neat to see them in the same building, but you know, even seeing that float around on social media, I was a little bit, you know, not anxious, but I was like, you know, that's a little awkward to see Mike fill in. You went from the oldest head coach in the league to the youngest in one fell swoop. But Seahawks Falcons going to be a lot of fun. Broncos -3 tonight at the Big Easy. Sean Payton's return game. Bo Nix is a 3-point road favorite against the Saints defense. Now, there's
rookie quarterbacks, both sides.
Rookies, by the way, who would have thought 2 years ago, Bo Nix, first-round pick, Spencer Rattler, fifth-round pick.
True.
Right? I mean, Spencer was a first-round, you know, guy, like a number one overall type of hype guy with Riles out at Oklahoma before the Caleb Williams phenomenon. Fast forward these years later, Bo's 12th overall and Spencer's fifth, like, I don't know, Steven. Compare the price points of the two draft positions as well. I think there's an argument to be had. Who would you rather have right now?
More valuable, Spencer Rattler?
More valuable. The MVR, most valuable rookie. Bo has left a lot to be desired, but you can tell, drinking from a fire hose, and it's a lot going on. You know, Rattler, we're going to see him tonight against a good Bronco defense, even without Sertan, but now he doesn't have Shaheed, and now he doesn't have Olave. He doesn't have a good offensive line in front of him. They're banged up. Like, there's injuries galore. This is the first Thursday night game I really feel like where you get two teams that are both not good that are also really banged up, and who the hell knows what's going to happen in this game.
100%, yeah, because the Saints came out so hot this season, the first two games where they're
flying.
40-plus points against the Cowboys. The first game against the Panthers, which, you know, it's the Panthers, but they put up, 40 points in that one as well. And then, you're right, you know, just kind of came to a screeching halt here, and now Derek Carr's hurt. You know, Spencer Rattler, Rashid, who has been really good this season on deep passes, he's hurt as well. Like, it is tough for the Saints and their whole situation right there. I never bought it anyways with Dennis Allen. And Dennis Allen, Derek Carr team, like, you can have them, in my opinion. Like, yeah. I'm not afraid of that team, so I didn't think it was going to last, but I didn't think it was going to halt like this. This is a tough spot, though, to be a favorite in the NFL on a short week, on the road, as a rookie, like that's a tough spot, and it shows kind of the brilliance of Sean Payton and how that team has been. Now, they didn't play well last week against the Chargers. Chargers just out-physicaled them and dominated them from the get-go on that one.
Chargers might be good.
But the Chargers might be good. And that was my second point, is that they might be good. So I think Denver would be the play, but I don't know. I'm actually staying away from it on a betting perspective.
You know me. Ain't no way I'm touching a Thursday night game.
To have a short week and be a rookie quarterback and favored on the road with the way that Bo Nix has played, where he hasn't looked spectacular, that's a tough spot for him.
Sean Payton homecoming game, all the emotion. You know, where does that Saints Super Bowl? I know you're a Jags fan, so not a lot of Super Bowl memories with the Jags. Although, by the way, I heard a great Tom Coughlin interview with the guys over at Pardon My Take this week. If you're a football fan, you'll love Tom Coughlin telling Tom Coughlin stories. Built those Jaguars from the ground up, man, from nothing. Got him to a couple AFC title game appearances.
Mark Brunell.
Isn't that amazing? Like
Jimmy Smith.
The Jaguars on the doorstep of a couple of Super Bowls.
Freddie T.
Not to mention 2017. Keenan McCardell, man. Mm. I mean, now I'm going Gruden mode. Come on, man. You know, Keenan McCardell.
You've been watching too many Gruden YouTube videos.
Who, ironically, played for John Gruden with the Buccaneers, caught a touchdown in that Super Bowl against the Raiders. And John Gruden crushing it on YouTube. He is made for YouTube, man. We miss John Gruden as an analyst. I will say that much. I don't think Monday Night Football has definitely not been the same, even though Troy Aikman's better than he was with his Fox days, especially late. But John Gruden, questionable character, no question about that.
Do you think Gruden gets a job somewhere? He said he's
as what? As an analyst?
Coach. No, as a head coach. Because he wants to get into coaching. He said he'd be fine coaching in college. Like, do you think John Gruden gets another opportunity to coach?
Probably in college. I think like college is custom made for him. But give me the over under. John Gruden gets a. Would it be group of five? Would it be like
a Jim Mora
Jr. UConn type deal?
Yeah, I think it's a.
What group of five can we get this guy to? That'd be fun.
It's what it's the Hugh Freeze. Wasn't he at Liberty?
It's Liberty then.
Like it's a team like that.
I don't know his politics, but maybe Liberty.
It's a school like that where they'll give him a chance, and then if he's successful, then he can move up to the SEC.
Well, can you imagine a John Gruden offense in college? They'd be awesome. Like they'd be really, really good. Who would be better at? How's this? Would Gruden be better at a group of five than Dion at Colorado? I'd say yes. I mean, Dion hasn't been right.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. No, I think you're right because
competition.
Dion is kind of running into this Wayne Tinkle thing for me, where it's let's just get the coaches' kids and you know Travis Hunter, who's you know been following the Sanders around. Once they leave, are they gonna be any good? Was Dion even is Dion going to be there when Shador and Travis Hunter go to the NFL?
I love Wayne Tinkle, Dion Sanders comparisons.
But like once they leave, I mean, just like Tinkle, you know, he had Ethan Thompson and Stephen Thompson and Trace Tinkle.
Hey, man, Wayne went to an Elite Eight.
Yeah, with Ethan Thompson.
With Ethan Thompson. That dude could ball. That's what I'm saying.
Colorado's going to go to a bowl game at 7-5 this year with Shador Sanders.
Where's Warren Sapp's kid? I'm assuming he's got kids. You know, is Warren Sapp have a kid playing for Colorado? He's on staff there.
He is on staff.
Pat Shurmur's kid? Actually, does Pat Shurmur have a kid playing college football? I think he does. Probably. He's a quarterback somewhere. I can't remember where he is, but
I don't know.
I'm with you. I'm with you. But
I just think Gruden's a better coach than Dion. Dion is
who wouldn't want to do NIL with Gruden? You know what I mean? Like go there and do that. Like he'd be so good. He'd be so good.
Yeah, but negotiating against John Gruden.
You're not going to win that.
You try to negotiate your NIL deal.
Gruden knows where all the bodies are, man. All of them. Even his competing coaches.
I can tell you what, I would not want to play for John Gruden. I would not want my kids to play for John Gruden.
These are the days we live in. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll play some Punch It audio. We'll also talk some Seahawks with Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune, and Sports Radio KJR. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano, leading up to Broncos Saints at 5:15 here on 7:50 The Game and the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 7:50 The Game.
Really, for us to be going into an incredible basketball conference, the job that the WCC has done, building from top to bottom over the last several years, strengthening itself, we just feel like we've landed in a great place. But by no means are we just happy to come in and be a participant. Believe me, we're focused. We're coming to get our program back where it belongs, to compete for a championship and get to the postseason play. And I know you'll probably talk about the polls here in a minute, but you know, we're not worried about that stuff. We know what we've got in our locker room and on the court. We're excited for what's in front of us.
That's Beavers coach Wayne Tinkle, Jude Anubi, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Canzano, who is down there at WCC Mountain West Media Day. John, back tomorrow with an exclusive with Gonzaga coach Mark Few. Be here 3 to 6 for that, Stephen. Beavs picked 7th in the WCC poll. We'll play some Punch It audio here coming up in a moment, but you feel like that's about right for them.
Yeah, I think it's about right for them. I mean, they're not a very talented roster. They don't bring anything back, really. They lost most of the really good players that they had from a season ago. A brand new roster for the Beavs once again, but you know, that is the good thing about the transfer portal, is that you can load up with other guys that played Division I basketball before. So we'll have to see what happens, but it seems about right, them being in the West Coast Conference. I mean, I'm a big Pac-12 guy. I'm a big West Coast basketball guy, so I'm going to love seeing Oregon State play at Gonzaga, see Oregon State play at Portland, see those type of games. I think that'll be a lot of fun to see them in the West Coast Conference. Also, like, they fit in better with them, like, talent-wise and skill-wise. So, like, they will be more competitive in the West Coast Conference than they ever were in the Pac-12 for the last, you know, handful of years.
Let's play a little Punch It audio. Best sound from all around. We'll start it with Ducks coach Dana Altman.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
On a day where Virginia head coach Tony Bennett is hanging it up, Dan Altman's still doing his thing down in Eugene, but he knows the landscape's changed. Punch it.
Recruiting is so much different than it was. You know, it used to be your relationship with maybe their junior college coach or their high school coach or their AAU coach, and a process of knowing the family. And, you know, the portal, you know, it's been described as speed dating, and that's pretty accurate with the portal. But even freshman recruiting is different. And so I've had to adjust. It's kind of hard changing something that you've done for 30, 40 years. But I think we've made the adjustment. It's good to have our staff back, guys that I've known and I know are really effective. Tony Stubblefield back, Josh back, you know, give us a big boost.
Just hearing Dana talk makes me want to curl up next to the fireplace with a good book and some hot cocoa. You know, he's got Grandpa Dana. I mean that with all respect, but he's Grandpa Dana at this point, overseeing the operation. But how important, Stephen, is it to get guys like Tony Stubblefield and some of his trusted assistants back in this new world of NIL and recruiting?
No, I think it's big because it's, as people have proven, like Dan Lanning, that's a 24/7, 365 job. And if you aren't about that life of going out and recruiting every second of the day, which it doesn't seem like Dana Altman is, he wants to coach. He wants to coach you on the court. You need guys that can go out there and do the recruiting, do that kind of stuff. And some people love that stuff. So I think it is big for Dana to get those guys in, like Stubblefield, who is a great recruiter, was part of the successful run that Oregon had a few years ago. So, yeah, I think it's big for Dana Altman to get him back to just almost probably more focusing on coaching on the court. And they have a talented team down in Eugene for Oregon basketball program. So it's one of those things. They're going to the Big Ten. We'll see how that transition goes. But they do have a talented team that has a chance to make the tournament.
Sabrina Ionescu played hero last night in the WNBA Finals. Punch it.
8 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter of Game 3. 4 seconds. Ionescu will heave. And hit! And hit! Sabrina Ionescu with the biggest shot in Liberty history.
And then does the mean mug. I mean, stone cold killer, Stephen. I mean, everyone was tweeting about this. Kevin Durant giving props and everything. And, like, and by the way, that's what the WNBA needed. They needed a viral moment. That was something just so awesome. A step back three. I mean, how viral, how perfect a moment is that for Sabrina and for the league right there?
Well, and outside of Caitlin Clark, Sabrina might be the most popular player. Like, I think with the backing that she has at Nike, the fact that, you know, when Kobe was around and alive, he had so much respect for her. You know, Sabrina's around that. Like, you know, she did the 3-point contest with Steph Curry. Like, she was the one to hit that shot. I think that helps a lot as well. Not saying if it was somebody else, it wouldn't matter, but I think you're right. Like, they are, you know, Sabrina capitalized on this moment. The WNBA kind of capitalized on this moment as well, because outside of Caitlin Clark, she is the most popular player, and she's awesome. That's, you know, we all know that watching her when she was down at Eugene at Oregon. Unfortunately, that COVID year, she couldn't get the championship. We all think that they would have. It's one of the biggest what ifs, I think, for Oregon history. But we know what kind of type of player she is.
Yeah.
And not surprising that she hits that shot. I will say, I was at Coach Vaughn actually turned that game on at the very end for that shot.
Nice.
Terrible defense, by the way, by the Minnesota player. She played absolutely terrible defense, but give Sabrina some credit. But oof, that was rough defense.
So I was wondering about that because part of me was thinking, is Sabrina kind of telegraphing her step back the whole way? But can you play that any better? Was she going to make that on any defense?
No, it was bad defense, though. Like
you just say, hey, no, there's no help, though. I mean, you gotta send a second to get it out of her hands.
No, it was just bad defense, though. It was a good move. Sabrina, she was going to get the shot off, but the Minnesota player didn't even step up or anything. She went the wrong direction at the initial spot of it, and Sabrina hit her with a step back.
So by the way, I learned to my earlier point, you could have won that game like on this kind of like, you know, runner at the rim that kind of curls around, goes in or whatever. But the aesthetics of a deep step back three.
It's like the Steph Curry effect.
That looks like Steph.
Yeah.
It's way better for the league.
No, it is.
You know what I'm saying?
It is. And
that playmaking, that individual playmaking to win a finals game, the league needed that and they got it. Courtesy Sabrina was awesome.
Well, how Caitlin Clark took over the college basketball world was her third play like that.
Yeah.
It's the exact same type of play. So, yeah, no, Sabrina. And Sabrina can do that as well. Like, if she was in the same situation as Caitlin Clark, she's putting up those numbers every night.
Could Friday night be a trap game for the second-ranked Oregon Ducks? Andy Staples, Oregon at Purdue. Punch it.
They're definitely better than Purdue. But this is also a Purdue team that fell behind by 24, came back and forced overtime, and lost to Illinois 50-49 in overtime. So they can make games somewhat interesting. Oregon is much more talented. This is also a Friday night game. The whole country's watching. So you're going to get probably Purdue's best shot here.
So one thing I just kind of thought about this morning, Stephen, are we going to wake up Sunday morning with the Oregon Ducks ranked number one in the country? Georgia, Texas this weekend.
That is, And Georgia, I saw this stat. Let me pull it up with under Kirby Smart. They have been a underdog, I believe, in 11 games that Kirby Smart has coached. This will be his 117th game with Georgia for Kirby Smart, only the 12th time. Georgia will be an underdog, 4-7 straight up as an underdog. So maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, but we definitely could be. Like, this is Oregon has a chance to be number one because I don't think they're going to stub their toe against Purdue. And Georgia against Texas, that's going to be a slobber knocker. Now, I will say Georgia hasn't played as well as we thought they would after the Clemson opening week game, but I kind of like Georgia.
You do?
I kind of do.
We could be waking up Sunday morning to the Duckies number one in the country if Georgia wins that game. All right. Talk a little Seahawks coming up on the other side with our friend Greg Bell, Tacoma News Tribune and Sports Radio KJR up in Seattle. What is going on with the 3-3 Hawks and another big game in Atlanta? That's coming up next. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Cazzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Cazzano on 750 The Game.
All right, Greg Bell covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Sports Radio KJR up in Seattle. 3-3 Seahawks, 4-2 Falcons out in Atlanta. Greg, thanks for making time. I mean, this kind of feels like a big game for the Hawks.
Well, yeah. Hi, Judah. Thanks for having me on. And when you're on a 3-game losing streak, they're all big, right? No matter who you play, you got to end that. They've ruined all their 3-0 start against inferior competition. They went against Bo Nix, a rookie quarterback, in his first start on their home field. They should win that. They went to New England with Jacoby Brissett, a quarterback who has proved to be just a fill-in. We knew it at the time, a fill-in waiting for Drake May to take over. And they had to go overtime to win that game. And then the Dolphins came out here without Tua at quarterback. Of course, he's out with the concussion. So a really ineffective Skylar Thompson was the quarterback in Seattle. So those are the first three games. So we don't truly know how good or maybe even how bad the Seahawks are. Their defense is a concern. It's why they hired Mike McDonald, especially to improve the run. They were 31st in the league against the run last year, 170-plus yards a game allowed. They allowed 228 to the 49ers last week, 176 to the Giants, 116 to the Lions. They're not going to beat the Falcons with Bijan Robinson and Algiers, and they're not going to be anybody until they shore that up. Mike McDonald's getting Byron Murphy back, the rookie first-round pick. Missed the last three games for the hamstring injury. The last time he played, Judah, was the Dolphins game, which is the last game the Seahawks won. And then they traded for Roy Robertson Harris from Jacksonville this week, who is known as a run-stopping three-technique, double-gap type of guy, V and C-gap around the offensive tackles. Having Murphy, the new trade, there's two assets to the run game defense that they haven't had in the last 3 weeks. They got to stop that first.
I also couldn't help but notice on the socials something that, you know, made me feel a type of way as a Seahawk fan, and that was Mike McDonald attending the basketball game. Of course, the Blazers were up there at Climate Pledge and taking on the Clippers, and Jody and Bert were up there, and saw John Schneider, and lo and behold, a run-in with Pete Carroll. I mean, what was that like to see float across the timeline?
Yeah, they haven't talked a lot since when Pete Carroll was fired in January. He just left, and they've seen each other in passing in the parking lot of the team facility. But other than that, Pete Carroll and Mike McDonald have really been two ships passing on the other continents. So when he saw McDonald, to hear him tell it, when he saw Pete Carroll a couple seats away in the front row at Climate Pledge Arena for that Blazers Clippers game Friday night, he went over and started talking to him. And it's really the first time he said he's had a long conversation with him. I don't get the impression Carroll's bitter. He wanted to stay. He tried to convince Jody Allen to keep him on, but he also wanted to keep his defensive assistants and his coaches intact to be loyal to them. And that's not the direction that John Schneider and the GM wanted to go. And Jody Allen and Burkhold chose John Schneider's direction, and then they hire Mike McDonald. And so Pete Carroll, if it had his way, he'd still be coaching in Seattle, but I don't get the impression he wants to coach anywhere else.
Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it was great to see Pete, but I was like, yeah, I don't know that it's all good vibes with him and the Seahawks, and nor should. I mean, that's the way these things go sometimes. Talking to Greg Bell, covers the Seahawks, Tacoma News Tribune, and KJR, Seahawks Falcons coming up on Sunday. You mentioned getting back Byron Murphy. I'm excited about that, certainly, and Robertson Harris as well. Saw Rayshon Jenkins goes to IR at the safety spot. What do they do? What's the move at safety? And I guess, you know, a corollary of that, the Titans released Jamal Adams today. Now, I'm not pining for Jamal to come back to Seattle necessarily, Greg. But
Nobody is.
Did that catch your attention at all?
Well, I noticed it. The Seahawks noticed it, and they have an issue. They have a history, of course, with them. And John Schneider is still devoting a portion of his salary cap to Jamal Adams for this year. But I don't see that fitting. If they saw it fitting, it would have happened in the offseason. In the immediacy of losing Rayshon Jenkins at safety, he's played every down for them. He's been quite active in the box as a run defender. We saw him take bad angles in the San Francisco game, including on the 76-yard game-clinching run by the rookie Jurendo that really ended the game. But by and large, Rayshon Jenkins has played well for them and has done a lot. So it's asking a lot for someone to come in like a Kevon Wallace, who has been the third safety. He's banged up too, and he hasn't played as much or as well the last couple games. They really liked him in training camp, and were using a lot of three safeties earlier in the season, but less so lately. I wouldn't be surprised if Kobe Bryant starts at that safety position with Julian Love on Sunday. Bryant's been getting more time lately as an extra safety in dime situations and six defensive backs when McDonald's gone to that. It'll be interesting to see how they play Atlanta as far as extra defensive backs, because I mentioned Bijan Robinson, Tyler Allgeier, who's 5.5 yards per carry. They throw to Robinson quite a bit out of the backfield, and Kirk Cousins is hot passing the ball the last three games. Atlanta's really doing a dual attack. Seattle's got to honor both the run and the pass here. And much like a different style than San Francisco, but similar in that you can't key on one and expect to take one away. There are some teams that the Seahawks play, they can say, well, if we take the run game away, our pass rush will get after the quarterback. Maybe not with Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. So the run game is going to be really important. Judah, I would run, if I was playing, I've watched every Seahawks game for like 15 years, I would run 40 times a game at the Seahawks until they prove they can stop it.
Yeah,
31st in the league last year. I mentioned the numbers they've given up recently in the ground. Until Mike McDonald gets the run fits better, his inside linebackers, Tyrell Dotson, Jerome Baker, to get off blocks, Byron Murphy comes back is going to help take up, eat up double teams and keep some of those offensive linemen off the linebackers that they've been getting the second level routinely this season so far. But I'd expect Atlanta to come out with a full load of Bijan Robinson and Algiers on the run game Sunday.
That, you know, they'd be wise to do so. And look, I'm no football expert, but, you know, I'm one of those guys that I try to watch the All-22 when it comes out and try to hear what other people are saying. I hear these light box, neutral box, you know, heavy box situations. I'm like, man, and at a certain point, Greg, you're hoping for average as a fan, it seems like. And, you know, if they can be average in that run defense department, I feel like that would do the whole team a world of good.
It would also help the fact that they have only forced one turnover all year.
Right.
They're not going to go anywhere with the turnover margin that they have. And when the problem is they're not getting teams in third and long situations that force the quarterback to that face a pass rush and make decisions under duress. And the defense knows that you have to throw so they can pin their ears back and come after you off the edge. Very few times this year Seattle's defense has been in that situation. It's been more like third and two, third and three, third and one when it could run or pass and the whole playbook's open. And Seattle has not been able to generate pressure on the quarterback and force passers into uncomfortable spots to throw the ball. The results are what they are. And that has to change. And the stopping the run on the early downs to create third and longs is really what that – when you say how are you going to get the turnovers, that's what they need to do. They need to get other teams in turnover downs. Third and one is not a turnover down. Third and 11, third and nine, when you get the pass rush going, that's when you can start getting after the quarterback and making them make bad decisions.
So we got this far without bringing up DK Metcalf and all his nice conversation with Ryan Grubb on the headset, his route running late that led to the interception. I know there's a lot to unpack out of that, and you've been covering it, you know, at the Tacoma News Tribune and on X as well. You know, where are we right now with DK, both in terms of his performance and everything that comes with him in terms of the energy and attitude he brings to the sideline and the field?
We're at Groundhog Day, Judah. I've been covering him for 6 years.
Yeah.
And when they lose, he does this. He gets mad. He vents his frustrations. I watched him get kicked out of a game in Green Bay when he swung at a Packer near the end of the game. That was in a three-game, what became a four-game losing streak. And when you ask him about this stuff, he says, I just want to win. And there is some validity to that. When they go stacking losses on top of losses is when this stuff happens. I can also tell you that he has outbursts a lot on the sidelines that I watch through my binoculars in the press box every week. The weekend before the Giants game, did the same thing to Frisman Jackson, the wide receiver coach, shooed him away, yelled at him, and walked away, stomped away. Jackson's chasing after him. Sideline cameras didn't catch that, so it didn't become a big story. But this is somewhat routine for him. And in Pete Carroll's world, Carroll was willing to put up with that. He's the one who traded up into the second round to get him, the physical freak that he is. And Mike McDonald has taken the same tack of not coddling, but trying to mold him into the system while living with the emotions that he has. Now, this week was somewhat different for Metcalf in that he was very upfront about owning the outburst with Grubb, said exactly what he said. He said he told Grubb he wanted to go past those defensive backs, the fill-in defensive backs the 49ers had. He said just run past them instead of these hooks and curls and out routes they were running early in the game. And he took ownership for the interception where he broke the route long and the quarterback undercut it. What's peculiar about that particular play, Judah, is that Geno Smith was in the pocket for 3.6 seconds. That's a long time in the NFL today, and it's a long time for Geno Smith to not get rid of the ball this season. 96% of throws in the NFL this season have been quicker than 3.6 seconds.
Yeah.
So Metcalf was expecting the pass way before he got it. It may not sound like 1 second's a lot, but when it's 2 and 3 seconds you get rid of the ball, the difference between 2 and 3 is often the difference between a completion of first down and a sack or an interception. And that's exactly what happened on that play. The longer that Smith held the ball, that's when the quarterback corner undercut it. That's when Metcalf improvised on his own. Smith didn't see or notice that and threw it to where it was planned to be rather than when Metcalf ran. If Smith threw that on time early, the corner doesn't undercut. Metcalf likely doesn't break off his route, and it's a completion for 15 yards over the middle.
Last thing for you, Greg, and thanks for your time. You know, this is they're coming off the mini bye week, as it were, with the Thursday night game last week. They've got a real bye week coming up in about 3 weeks. They've got road Atlanta, home Buffalo, and then taking on the LA Rams. And then hitting their bye. So it feels like this group of three games is, you know, kind of pivotal in terms of determining the shape of the season. I know it's a Mike McDonald homecoming of sorts, going back to his roots in Georgia and the Atlanta area. I just smile thinking about a couple of Huskies going at it in Ryan Grubb and Jimmy Lake. you got the Seahawks' own history in that building, right? With the playoffs and, week one a few years ago with Russell going off. You know, what storyline, I guess, you know, grasps your eye the most going back to Atlanta at this point in the season?
Well, the bigger picture here, yeah, there are some of those. And McDonald kind of blew off the University of Georgia in Athens about 45 minutes from Atlanta. In that angle, I'd be really surprised if another Husky angle comes up and Michael Penix Jr. actually gets in the game for the first time in a regular season. That doesn't seem like that's going to happen either. But it's going to be a shootout to me. And this is when Geno Smith has been at his best, indoors, on the road, with a team in Atlanta that is the worst pass rush team in the league. No team gives quarterbacks time to throw more than they do, and no team gives up completion percentage at a higher rate than Atlanta does. I think Grubb's looking at this game plan and saying, yeah, I know we need to run the ball, and we do. But let's open it up and see if Atlanta can affect Geno Smith, because I think if we have Smith time to throw and they aren't getting a pass rush, I'll take Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Jackson Smith and Jigba against anybody, any secondary. So I think it's going to be a shootout. We may see Geno Smith at his best, which is 500 yards this season, and it'll be a question of whether Seattle's defense can hold down Kirk Cousins in the Atlanta running game. I think both teams are going to score 30 points.
I love it. Yeah, it feels like one of those Detroit road games or, you know, the New Orleans road game last year.
So, you just mentioned the four best games of Geno Smith's career.
Rubbing the hands together. It's a fun matchup and a good one and a big one all the way around. Greg, hey, thanks for making the time. Thanks for playing Hurt today. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
He's
thanks for putting up with
it. At G-Bell Seattle on X. And, you know, 6-0, number 22, Army. How about that, you know?
You waited till the very end to bring that up.
I know. Should have led with that.
Beat Navy. I'm really looking forward to the Army-Navy game. I'll be at that DC this year, but man,
that'll be awesome.
We've been in this position.
All right. Appreciate you, Greg. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, sir.
That is Greg Bell. Good stuff with him. Seahawks Falcons. Coming up, we'll do the 5 at 5 leading up to Thursday Night Football at 5:15. Junior Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for Canzano on the Bald Faced Truth.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Jude Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald Faced Truth.
5 o'clock hour. Jude Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano, leading you up to a Thursday night football kickoff where Bo Nix, Sean Payton, and the Broncos go into New Orleans to take on the Saints. Broncos laying 3 on the road. We'll do the 5 at 5 here. Coming up momentarily, Canzano back tomorrow. He'll have an exclusive interview with Gonzaga men's basketball coach Mark Few, part of Media Days for the Mountain West and WCC today in Vegas. So good stuff. Be here for the Mark Few, John Canzano conversation tomorrow. In the meantime, let's do the 5 at 5. Steven's got us covered today.
The 5 at 5.
Number one, Steven, what do you got for us today to lead it off?
Well, Virginia basketball head coach Tony Bennett will not be the Virginia basketball coach anymore as he has retired out of nowhere, really. Season 20 days away, Tony Bennett has announced his retirement. The 55-year-old, he was going to start his 16th season with Virginia, but has called it a day, will not be coaching anymore. Now, sources are saying that Bennett's decision is not health-related, so that is really good. You know, a lot of people were jumping to that conclusion, saying, well, maybe there's something wrong health-wise. Seems like it's not. Seems like it's more of a NIL transfer portal reasoning for him to leave and not be a coach anymore. Of course, Tony Bennett was the head coach of Virginia when they won the national championship, beat Texas Tech, and then they were also the head coach when they lost the 16 seed, UMBC, the year prior to that. So Tony Bennett, one of the best coaches, only 55 years old, but calling it a day, retiring.
Now, that title with Texas Tech, was that the game that came down to the wire? Or am I thinking of
that
the Auburn game?
That was the Auburn game. The Auburn game went to overtime.
With the foul call?
Yeah, that was Kyle Guy getting fouled on three. Now, the other game against Texas Tech was close as well, but no, the Auburn game went to overtime. Down three, Kyle Guy gets fouled on a three-point shot.
You know, that legacy, losing in the 116 and then winning the title the next year, couldn't have happened to a better guy, Tony Bennett. Like, high-character guy. Fascinating kind of legacy. Odd timing. Unfortunate for Virginia. Probably going to see a lot of players leave, you would think, at this point. I'm just wondering, if he knew this was going to be the case a couple months ago, you know, why wait till now?
Yeah, but, I mean, there's reports that are out there saying, you know, that Tony Bennett, he was at ACC Media Day last week.
Yeah.
Seemed like he was in very good spirits. Like, there was
what's going on?
No sign of this. So, you know, but he had brought up stuff about the challenges at NIL and how stressful it was. So, while it is stunning, yes, that he did leave, you know, he was kind of putting hints out there, like, I don't like the way that college basketball is going. But, like I said, he was at ACC Media Day, showed no signs of that, was in a good mood. So, it is very shocking.
Okay.
Number two.
Well, your former quarterback, Russell Wilson, your favorite player, he is preparing to get the go as the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday against the New York Jets. Mike Tomlin has declined to name a starter, but Wilson, who aggravated a calf injury in early September, has taken first-team reps in practice and has led the quarterback rotation to individual drills this week for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was active last week against the Raiders. Did not play. That was the first time he was active all week. But it looks like Russell Wilson's going to be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are 4-2 on the season. Justin Fields, I will say this. Justin Fields came out today and he said, if I played better, there would be no talk about this. It'd be, you know, there wouldn't be a competition. He put the blame on himself. I loved it. I love the fact that he took ownership of it. Like, yeah, you know what? If I played better, it would be my job. And I give the Steelers credit, too, for saying, look, like, yeah, we're 4-2, but, you know, in those wins, the defense gave up less than 10 points, like, in all those games, I believe. So it wasn't like the offense was rolling. Let's try something different. I think it's a good move. You got to see what you have with Russell Wilson. If it doesn't work out, you know you still have Justin Fields on the bench, who's going to do a solid job as well. So I think it's good all around. I love that, you know, Fields took ownership of it. I love that the Steelers are making a move, being proactive. You know, they're 4-2. But Russell Wilson looks like he's going to be starting this next week against Aaron Rodgers. I mean, the NFL gets it right. You can't make it up. They get the storylines right every single time. Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and now you get Russell Wilson back in the fold as well.
I was going to say the same thing. NBC's going to pull a big number Sunday night. Russell Wilson against that Jets defense. How do you think he does Sunday against the Jets? Jets defense didn't look great Monday night, I'll be honest. First game post-Sala.
I don't think that the Steelers will be great. I think they'll be fine.
You think they'll be better?
I think it'll be a little better. I think Russ still has a little something. But I don't, you know.
He's got, obviously, he'll hit Pickens. You know, he'll keep Pickens happy.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I think that could be better than Fields. Fields is obviously more mobility, more run game.
The reports out of practice was Russ looked athletic today.
Yeah, like of course. I'm sure he looks spry. I'm sure he looked like the Energizer Bunny out there.
It would be pretty funny if they're like, no, he looked terrible. Couldn't move, but no, he...
true Steeler.
Yeah, he looked okay, looked better. He says he's feeling as good as he has felt in a long time, so...
You know, Rodgers loves Russell Wilson. You know, that's his type of quarterback right there. Well, that's going to be fun. I don't see it working out long-term for anybody, but... I'm pulling for him. I hope it's not a nightmare on Sunday night.
Number three.
Tell me you've heard of this before, but Los Angeles Clippers star Kawhi Leonard, he is set to miss an indefinite period of time to start the NBA season due to his right knee injury, according to Shams of ESPN. Of course, Leonard, he missed last year in the playoffs. He missed 2021 as he recovered from a torn ACL, played in just 52 games in the 2022 season. Clippers, they tip off regular season October 23rd against the Phoenix Suns. Kawhi Leonard, 33 years old, a six-time All-NBA selection, two-time Finals MVP, one with the Spurs, one with the Raptors. But he's going to be out indefinitely for the Clippers, who lost Paul George in the offseason. So this is a Clippers team that I think with the news of Kawhi Leonard being out for an indefinite amount of time, they were really relying on him.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they need to make sure he's healthy. But without Kawhi Leonard, that's a Clippers team that may not make the playoffs.
Like, yeah, well, I was going to ask you. Good. Is this a soft tank starting here?
I don't think it's a soft tank, no, because the Clippers are in L.A. They're competing against the Lakers. They have the new arena. I don't think Ballmer wants to tank at all. I think, if anything, they would try to make more trades and bring more players in, bring more other stars. But this is going to be one of the situations where James Harden, who has played well with the Clippers, since he's been acquired by the Clippers, we all kind of made fun of him and being fat and all that kind of stuff. Harden's been really good with the Clippers since he's gotten there. This is going to be another season where we're going to see if Harden can kind of carry that team like he did in Houston for a while, where he was the guy. I don't know that he can do it anymore because of his age, but Harden's going to have to be awesome this year for the Clippers to make the playoffs, just to even make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
Number four.
All right, I want to get your take on this. So we used to think, 50-yard field goals was really good. It was a really, it was an accomplishment. Well, now we kind of think of it as just like a chip shot. So the NFL, they are talking about making kicking harder, especially deep kicks, 50-yard field goals. So NFL Executive VP of Communications Jeff Miller said on a media conference call that the issue of field goal kicking length and accuracy, they're going to be considering some things in the offseason. He said the competition committee will look at that and any other rules in the offseason. Miller also said that he pointed out that the season has featured 339 field goals made, with 77 of them beyond 50 yards. He said it's something that has gotten noticed, but there's nothing pending from a rules change perspective. So the NFL is not happy that there's more kicks, not touchdowns. We've seen scoring down this season. Maybe that is because of kicking. Now, we do see fourth down, goes up. I think there's been a lot more fourth down, going for it on fourth down. But teams are willing to kick a 55-yard field goal rather than go for it. NFL wants that to not happen. They want more action on the field. So some of the floating ideas, check these out. Narrowing the uprights.
on a longer field goal or just in general?
Just in general. These would be general things he changed on kick, just for regular games. Narrow the uprights, crossbar being raised, or reducing it to 2 points of a field goal that's 50 yards or longer. You only get 2 points instead of three.
Reducing points for a longer field goal.
Yes, these ideas have all been floated out. And then the last one would be to have air taken out of just the kicking balls. So they use different balls when the kickers come in. They have less air in those, so they can't kick it as far. What do you think of all these?
Get Brady on the case. I think it's all kind of ridiculous, frankly. And I honestly think don't take your data from the warmest months of the football season. Let's see how well those 50-plus yarders are doing in November and December. Okay? It's a four-month year. You're pulling all these data from great weather and, some of these are domed stadiums. You know what I'm saying? It's still hard to kick in the NFL. People are treating it like it is easy.
Personally, I want to see a 2-point field goal.
I think 2-point, getting penalized for your skill is
for 50 yards
or longer. Opposite of what we're looking for, man.
Number five.
The longer the field goal, the less points you get. Good. I love that. All right, and then the last one, we'll wrap it up. Thursday Night Football tonight, Bo Nix versus Spencer Rattler. Two rookie quarterbacks, Bo Nix and the Broncos, taking on the Saints in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Broncos, 3-point favorite, the return of Sean Payton. Who you got, Judah Newby?
I got the under, 37.5. 37.5, and I'm
don't
taking the under.
Don't hate that.
A lot of injuries, so this could get wacky. I stay away from sides on Thursday night because, holy cow, I don't know how to pick a Thursday night game. But if I had to, I'd say the Broncos 20-17. They push and the under hits. What do you got?
I mean, I've been so bad this year. It's been noted. Kanzano likes to make fun of me on it. I'll go opposite. I'll go Saints. Give me the home team plus points.
Well, congrats beforehand on your victory. Fading me on a Thursday is always a smart idea. That's the show. Our thanks to Greg Bell talking Seahawks, Jaden Robinson as well. Find the podcast if you missed it. Kanzano and Mark Few tomorrow, 3-6. Be here.